This is the February 27 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Dave Chatterton. He's at Strategic Farm Marketing out of Champaign, Illinois. Chuck Shelby joins us from Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. And Glenn Ring of Glenn Ring Enterprises here from Council Bluffs, Iowa. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org. And there you can buy your tickets. This is important. You can still do it for the All-Day Ag Outlook. That's next Tuesday at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. It's a great event that we started back in 1991, and it's been held at the Beef House ever since. If you've not been, join us next Tuesday. The cost is just $30. We'll have a baker's dozen worth of commodity analysts, four extra analysts after that, so 17 total for the day-long event. And the cost, again, $30, includes a Beef House roll and coffee in the morning. We open our doors at 8 a.m. Central Time, as well as a Beef House lunch. You can't get a better deal than that. Join us next Tuesday. WILLAG.org or 800-898-1065. You can dial in during regular business hours to purchase your tickets today. Let's get started. Glenn Ring, it's been a while since you've been with us at the Beef House. I think the last time was, nearly a decade ago, right?
About a decade ago. Probably the most memorable time was a little bit longer than that. It was 2008. Which I'm not sure what you're doing to me here, Todd. You seem to bring me on for these kind of things.
Well, I bring you on a day where we closed the Dow down nearly 1,200 points and 3,000 points for the week. I think we probably ought to start by talking about the broader context, which is kind of your area of expertise of the marketplace. What do you think?
Well, and there's some ways that this time is similar to 2008. Yeah, you remember in that time we were coming off of, or in fact we were finishing a grand manic bull market in the commodity arena. Prices, in fact, on the day at the Beef House, the prices hit air pockets of many commodities on March 4th. And in some markets, their spring highs were marked on March 3rd. Many markets had their highs for the spring marked before March was over. But that was really the beginning of a problem that kicked in July, when we retested highs and such like that. I'm worried about the air pocket that we're hitting right now in the stock market being the big one for the stock market, especially as the next 20-year cycle in stocks is due to be posted as a low in 2022. So we're not that far away. Also, the previous 20-year cycle, we peaked in the first quarter of 2000, 20 years ago, and declined into 2002. Granted, 9/11 happened within that time to help propel it, but I'm just very, very worried that this air pocket that we've hit in the stock market is really a sign of a bull market in cash starting. And what troubles me a lot about this, with the Dow, the NASDAQ, and the S&P, the big three in our country, being thrown into the mix, since January 1st, 40 markets have posted early year peaks. Now, that counts the peak in yields in the treasuries. But 40 markets that I track have posted peaks. One has not. Palladium still rallying. Gold and silver are questionable. Silver jabbed its January high and stumbled severely. Gold thrust above it for about a week and now is stumbling. If virtually all prices come down, you're looking at a bull market in cash. And that's, the mania is the opposite of a bull market in cash, or is a bull market, opposite, a bear market in cash, where if everything is rising, rising tide lifts all boats, people are throwing their cash to convert it into commodities, convert it into assets, and they keep rising. If everything starts falling, you are going the other way. You're converting your assets into cash as the system goes on. And I worry about this coronavirus thing being the catalyst, not the cause, but the catalyst for such a severe slowdown. When you shut commerce and movement of money down, it's not the supply of capital, it's the velocity of capital. And if you grind it to a halt, you get a bull market in cash. The floor comes out from under us.
What does that mean to you as it relates to agriculture, whether it's commodity prices or the price of farmland, all those sorts of assets.
Yeah, I am certainly not an expert on farmland when it gets down to it. It will deflate probably if this goes on. But I will put it this way. If I could buy farmland with cash, it's one of the places I would store my money because its relative value was likely to hold up. But I wouldn't want one bit of debt against it because, you know, if I put 50% down on a piece of farmland and it falls in half in value, my equity stake is gone. But if I buy 1,000 acres of farmland and it falls 50% in value, I still have 1,000 acres of farmland, and it's probably going to hold more relative value. So if we get into a bull market in cash for agriculture, our commodity prices will probably do better, relatively better than the rest. But what if we do, a 75% retracement in stocks and we only cut ag prices in half? You've done relatively better. So right now, I don't want to put say that I'm in a panic mode because I'm not. I'm in a mode of I'm very, very respectful of the dangers that exist. And if the 2008 time frame marked what I call the orthodox top, when the most markets peaked at the same time in the mania, the opposite reaction to that is the bull market in cash, the mania in cash, which is a severe deflation. I've got to respect that the facts won't matter, but rather what the masses are doing will matter. And if people are selling, we will fall. If I can build cash soon, if I can get into a cash strong position somewhere this year, next year, or the year after, I don't know when it's going to be, I can put that cash to work. But first and foremost, I respect that defense is where I'm at. Anything changes for a given market if it posts a new high for the year on a closing basis, with the exception of silver, gold, or palladium. Palladium has its own unique bull market going. Silver and gold right now are risk assets, and I'm not going to chase them in a panic mode. But take, for example, if corn closes above its January 2nd highs, I change my play. But unless and until we do that, it is what it is. The marketplace has said, like I said, with 40 markets having posted highs since the first of the year, 15 of them in the first week of the year, 34 in total in January, having posted highs for the year so far in that early year time frame, we're in a bear market until we prove otherwise.
Chuck Shelby, why don't you jump in here? What's your assessment of what's happened this week, and how do you, as a producer and a broker, manage it?
Well, it certainly has been eye-opening and challenging. It seems like the bottom line answer would be with everything slowing down, we're going into a world recession. We see commodities that already started to, you know, weaken up, and going forward here, I think, as Glenn said, being defensive is the best scenario you can look at. Really, the fundamentals of what we normally talk about, you know, we're coming up on planted acres and springtime weather and all those kind of things have really kind of put on the back burner as this other coronavirus has caused all this turmoil. So going forward from here, one thing, you know, it's in the little bit of a positive mode. Would China buy anything? They said they would here as we move into March. Will there be some buys out there? But I think overall our attitude has turned to the same mentality as until we see some reasons to turn the corner here, probably trying to play defense, get some floors underneath us somehow, and then just see how this thing plays out because nobody really knows if we can get it under control by spring. That's something that nobody knows. And when you have uncertainty, it leads to the kind of markets we've seen in the past several days and in the past few weeks. It's just gone downhill and gotten worse and worse.
And Dave Chatterton, your assessment?
Yeah, Todd, I mean, very similar to what we're seeing. And unfortunately, I think for agriculture, if we put it in specific terms, or for agricultural production in the Midwest, the timing here is really poor. We've just concluded our series of spring producer meetings and getting ready, and we've got the crop insurance and the ARC PLC deadline ahead of us here just in a couple of weeks. Those crop insurance guarantee values are well below where they were a year ago and certainly below the previous years to that. And so the amount or the ability for a farmer to project a positive margin at this point, now input costs have come down, but they haven't come down with the speed that we've seen a decline in grain and livestock prices, et cetera. And so in doing so, you're projecting a forward look into 2020, if, you know, for as far as new crop production or farmers that are holding old crop production, that doesn't pencil very well. And, you know, we've got a crop insurance guarantee below a year ago. We've got commodity values that are falling. If the world goes into a full-on recession, especially if China, you know, leads the way in that process and in light of the phase one agreement and the commitments that have been put on the table here, it becomes very, very tough to find a situation where we sustain a rally in agriculture. You know, we've got the things that Chuck mentioned, planting and acres and all the things that go on to plant and grow and harvest the crop. But as you said, they're in a secondary role when we're talking about a macro market here. And I think, you know, from what Glenn, you know, framed it up in a global sense, I think what we see in our commodity markets, and particularly in agricultural commodities, is that outside capital flow tends to be the biggest mover in our markets. It can happen on the downside, but particularly on the upside. If you look at that global, let's say, equity and bond market in comparison to the global stock market, you're talking about a multiplier that's probably more than 60-1. So when a global fund manager decides he's going to apply 10% of his capital base into the commodity markets and maybe point that at ag, it becomes a very overwhelming situation. So those opportunities may or may not come down the road, but for right now in this flight to safety, it's a vacuum and it's money going out of the markets, not coming into the markets, whether it's the equity markets, the bond markets, you know, the commodity markets. It's as Glenn mentioned, a cash, you know, type of a situation. So that's not the environment that we're looking for. I guess we have to be hopeful that this thing reverses itself or becomes under control very quickly. I don't have any better insight on, you know, global pandemics and where this thing will end than the next person, and opinions are very strong on both sides of the issue. So right now the market has a lot of uncertainty, and that uncertainty pulls money out of the market, pushes people to the sidelines, and unfortunately doesn't paint a very rosy picture for agriculture going forward. In that sense, as was mentioned, producers need to be on the defensive here. You need to know your break-evens. You need to be prepared to act at what you would call modest margins and keep yourself in the game and be playing some defense.
Hey, Chuck, I want to ask you about the Farm Bill decision, the ARC PLC. I don't know whether you had any FSA farms that would have been completely prevent plant. You probably have talked to people maybe that have. Those for corn you would do ARC IC on most likely for sure. However, in general, and I'll have a discussion with Gary Schnitke on Monday, because we'll have, you know, the final numbers for the month as it relates to crop insurance, about crop insurance, and I'll talk to him about the ARC PLC decision. But to this point, it's mostly been PLC for corn and ARC for soybeans. Does this week change that at all for you, and is that where you were at this point?
I did have a couple farms, whole farms, Todd, that went into ARC individual. The other general theory is, or most guys are taking PLC on corn and ARC County on soybeans. I don't think what's happened here really changes those decisions much. It just looks like going forward that with what's going on in these markets, there's going to create some payments as we go forward. So that, at this point, I think that's the general look at what farmers are doing.
Yeah, I didn't think it would change the ARC IC decision for any reason, because that's a backward-looking thing, relatively speaking. It was the ARC decision for soybeans that I thought you might consider.
For our own farms, we took the ARC County. I know there are some toss-ups of maybe ARC County and PLC for soybeans, but it's pretty hard to, you know, when we have this kind of environment, to make any major changes.
Yeah, right. And they have until the 16th. No matter what you've done, you have until the 16th to go back to the FSA office and make some decisions. And again, the All Day Ag Outlook, of course, is Tuesday, and Gary will be there if you haven't signed up. And boy, I hope you have, because I think we'll have to have some really good discussions that day. I'll have an interview with Gary for the closing market report. By the way, you should be in your truck on the way home from that event, so you'll be able to listen to it and see how well he did on Monday as compared to Tuesday, because I'll record with him on Monday, so we'll see how that happens. All right, so what do we think about this week? And I think, Chuck, I'll stay with you for just a second, because there are an awful lot of basis contracts that are still out there. I kind of looked at the marketplace thinking that, you know, we ought to see some widening, maybe, if those basis contracts are actually not rolled, I suppose, into the May or the July in the spread. What did we see so far, and what are you telling producers to do with them?
We had producers that rolled out of the March, and we had other producers that just basically cashed it in with the action that we've seen from the coronavirus impact in the market. So it was about a 50-50 split of what producers we work with have done. I think with what's going on here, though, we're going to struggle to see these markets recover without some really earth-shattering changing news. So there was rolling going on. There was guys cashing in and giving up. But basis remains very strong for both corn and beans in most areas. So that telling you that the cash market is still relatively strong at this point, as long as the demand hangs in there and we don't see any impacts on our own internal U.S. demand.
In fact, do you think, Dave, that the market will be on the hunt for corn? I made note that USDA in its state stories released this week on the 25th updated the harvest for North Dakota to 61%. In December, it was, 43% on the last weekly outlook, if I remember correctly. So they now say that 61% of the crop, corn crop in North Dakota, has made its way into the bin in some form.
Yeah, Todd, I mean, for our sake, our producers, I think, were maybe a little bit heavier on the roll side than what was indicated by Chuck. I think every situation is different. But in general, our guys that were in our stable were very reluctant at this point to price on these lows, and because the spreads had narrowed up, particularly in corn, and let's say 4 cents to May or 8 cents, 7.5 to the July, it presented them the opportunity to get that rolled. The question going forward is just what we've talked about: the path that leads to sustained higher prices for corn and soybeans right now is pretty tough to come by. So I think you have to manage those positions in a proactive way and be prepared to stay and to stick with them. I think there's two stories on basis right now. One is just lack of selling in general, slow farmer movement. I think the other is a quality issue, particularly in corn and particularly in the PNW. We've seen South Korea, balk at some recent tenders from the U.S. saying, hey, your quality is under spec and we're not going to, we don't want any more corn from you. And here in the Midwest, test weights and other issues are certainly a spread in what a commercial merchant is willing to do on a push between quality dry corn and corn that's got a few issues or is lighter test weight. I think those probably get exasperated as we go forward and as some of these spring bins, start to be cleared out here over the rest of the winter and into the early spring. And so it's going to be a very interesting basis play. Certainly, if we had some kind of a rally in the board, I think that would immediately put some pressure on the basis in a lot of different areas and across a number of different commodities. But right now we've got, even with some cash flow needs coming forward, in our opinion, or from what we're seeing, I should say, a very reluctant seller and the producer at this moment.
Reluctant on old crop, and you're probably talking them through part of that. But from you and Chuck, I would like to know, on new crop, are you trying to price out as quickly as you can, and were you before this week? I would guess that might have been the case.
We've gotten to about a third sold on new crop corn and beans both. That was, in a situation where new crop beans were in the 960 area, new crop corn was just above, let's say 4, 405. In a number of cases, we use options to do that, where we take some downside protection and leave some upside float. I'd certainly love to get back to those values and be able to add a little bit. Because we've got some time, because of the unknowns in the market of planting and growth and what happens with China, particularly in the second half of the year, I guess we've been willing to be patient going forward on that. But certainly we're looking for those opportunities. If we get back to anywhere near those levels in beans and back to or above those levels in corn, our plan is to continue to add to that. And in some cases, we'll do it in a situation with options where we can leave some upside potential there, some ability to play in the upside from people who are cash sellers. I think we'll just do, we'll be looking at HTAs and evaluating basis on a case-by-case basis.
We made some new crop sales in the cash market, as Dave did, at some higher levels in both corn and beans. And then we've gone to a put strategy to be defensive here. I think the downside is still open. And when you go back even before this virus, the USDA on corn anyway had implied that with we were going to plant more acres and with a normal yield, their average price of corn was going to be even lower. So going forward, I think there's still reasons to be defensive in some options and hope we can get some future rallies going. The soybean market, a little bit interesting today, is one of the few markets out there that had the ability to bounce back and rally some. So hopefully the Chinese maybe buy some things, or we can push this bean market a little higher, either make some cash sales or, again, look at some put option strategies over in the beans.
That's a great observation. I hope it was going to be made. The resilience we've just seen this week in corn and or not corn in soybeans and soybean meal is quite impressive to me, especially for the short term. And this is the right week for a stereotypical seasonal low in corn beans type markets. The fact that corn's not responding, it's just broken out of a 4-month wedge, bothers me a lot. I go with the weakness. But the same thing's going to be true with beans. I will go with weakness if we close below the lows we've made this week. But in the meantime, I'm actually willing to give it a chance to rebound. And if I had any desire to buy call options, with where we're at now in both corn and beans, this seasonally is often the cheapest time of year to buy them in terms of the volatility inputs. So if you want to buy some calls to sell against later if we get rallies, et cetera, this is a site I'm on for that. But bottom line is give the beans a chance to rebound right here. But if they close into new lows, I'm selling it like I am corn and wheat.
I think as I listen to this all and I'm thinking about everything that's in play that producers have at this time as in the toolbox, in particular crop insurance, along with the ARC and PLC, 2022, if things continue, might be entirely different. But 2021 might be entirely different. But 2020 has a lot of toolbox. It appears in the toolbox, it appears to me, that will cover an awful lot of their risk, or at least it seems like that may be the case. Am I thinking about that right, Chuck?
There's a lot of tools, but farmers have been kind of beat up by this market, and with the tariff war and all the different things that have happened, and you throw on this coronavirus, so the farmers are struggling to step out and make decisions, and it's especially hard for producers to sell into a down market like this. It's certainly challenging, but I think you just have to use everything at your disposal. Be prepared for the worst, and then, you know, look for some small bright spot opportunities to come in and, you know, wait this thing out or make some steps that can ensure you get a little bit of profit locked in, possibly.
What'd you make of the Farm Futures 96 million acre corn number that was released today?
Well, I think they're maybe on the high end. I think where the real challenge comes in or real acreage issues are the Western farmers. Those producers out there still have crop in the field. I think those are the ones that have increased their acres, Todd, and pushed it up over time. And with the weather forecast and what they have going on out there, I'm more leaning towards the 94 than the 96. I just don't think the Western guys are going to push corn that much, especially with the prices and what they got going as far as trying to get the crop out and get the crop in.
Dave, how about you?
Yeah, Todd, I mean, the number looks a little challenging. When we talk to our contacts in the Northwest Belt, you know, where corn is still standing in the Dakotas, you mentioned the harvest progress number there, but certainly with the amount of water that we see, not only, you know, in the, let's say, a grace root zone soil moisture profile or the drought monitor or looking at the forward forecast and looking at these temperatures, there's a lot of water that needs to move out of the basin in the next several weeks in order to not have another challenging spring in 2019. I think those are limiting factors. Our contacts in the Dakotas are telling us that with the prevent plan experience last year, where yields and test weights and ended up and with crops still in the field, that we're likely to see a higher prevent plant number from those particular areas this year than we were last year. I don't think that's true necessarily of, you know, say Northern Illinois or Northwest Indiana or the other big pockets of prevent plant last year. So all else equal, you've got, you know, you had a record prevent plant number last year of 20 million. The previous record prevent plant was less than 10 million. typically we have 3.5 or 4.5. So if you add in some problems in the Dakotas and maybe we still have, you know, 7 or 8 million or 6 or 7 million prevent plant, that's still relatively, you know, a lot of acres looking to come back into production. Right now, the new crop corn bean ratio or even the old crop numbers don't really, they're about 2.35 to 1. They don't show a strong indication one way or the other, corn over bean. So I have to assume that, you know, that 96 million looks a little high, but certainly the number is going to go up, and that's going to come right to the bottom of the balance sheet. Beans have maybe a little bit better chance simply because of where China could be. But if it's a challenging spring and we push some acres out of corn and into beans, we're in the same situation there. So any way we slice it, you know, demand, you know, needs to come into this market to balance things out. And right now, that's what we're struggling with between the pandemic and between the China deal and our export values and the South American crop and all the competition that we've got on that side of the fence.
Let's wrap this thing up now. I'll get a final word, and I think I'll start with you, Dave Chatterton.
Yeah, Todd, again, I mean, I think, you know, defense is a word that's been talked about here. We've been in a defensive, you know, marketing mode really for the last 4 or 5 seasons. And unfortunately, until we see some change worldwide or in the U.S. that starts to lower these, you know, these carryouts, you have to have that mentality. Does that mean you can't see good prices? No. I mean, last year is a great example. We had December corn go to 470 for a heartbeat last summer. It didn't stay there very long, but I think what you have to be is prepared to act and prepared to take a realistic view of the market. And, you know, the conversations that I've been having the last couple of weeks with people who are undermarketed, who are still sitting on a lot of old crop and who haven't sold any new crop, that's a tough deal. I think one of the farm credits out west did a study, and they looked at their farmers' profitability, and something like 54% of the net profitability for that group of farmers came from last year's MFP payment. Now, looking forward, you know, I think a month ago or 3 weeks ago, people would have thought the chances of another MFP in 2020 were pretty low. I think over the last couple of weeks, those odds have definitely moved up to at least 50-50. So there's going to be, you know, as we mentioned, a lot of those safety net plays to be aware of, but you need to be doing your homework on things like ARC PLC, like the type of crop insurance that you have, like what you can count on for, you know, for other government cash flows and the marketing side of that, and using every tool in your toolbox to try and keep your farm profitable through a little bit of what can be a tough stretch here.
Chuck Shelby, your final word, please.
It's another challenging year here. We did see opportunities that have come along when we don't really expect them, just as we've seen things to the negative side. It's going to take a lot of effort next year to produce some, you know, positive cash flows on our farm, but it is what it is. We've been dealt this hand, so work with somebody to manage through this the best you can, and there's a lot of things that can still happen as we go into the growing season of 2020.
And Glenn Ring from Glenn Ring Enterprises.
Todd, I'm going to get this reputation of always being bearish, and that's not quite so. Last August, I was actually optimistic for commodity prices. Until we rallied in the year end, a lot of my timing work went backwards or inverted by doing that. What I think people need to respect is how bad can we get? Look at the energy markets. How low can we go? I'm not calling for us to go that low on the crops and things like that, but you just got to respect right now defense. My goal for people that follow me is to get people to survive. Whether it's just well into 2020 or maybe for as long as into late 2022. That's my window. After that, I think we could have some much better times coming.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like on our website. The address there is willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists for the week, including Dave Chatterton from Strategic Farm Marketing, Chuck Shelby from Risk Management Commodities, and Glenn Ring from Glenn Ring Enterprises. Hey, don't forget that next week we'll all gather over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. We'd love to see you there as well. The cost is just $30 for the whole day. We'll have a baker's dozen commodity analyst with us, 13 of them that is, plus another 4 to talk about the futures markets, cash basis, how old and new crop are working to each other, coronavirus, we'll take a look at the weather forecast, the future of agriculture, ARC and PLC and the crop insurance decisions, and we'll discuss USDA NASS and their reports. If you've not ever been, please sign up right now, willag.org, willag.org, or call 800-898-1065 today. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.